And so the next presentation is by Scott Weeb, and I hope I say that correctly. Is Scott here? Excellent. And he'll be talking about biomass removal in a black spruce ecosystem, temporal dynamics of carbon loss and nutrient fluxes of coarse woody debris.
Thank you. First, I'd like to acknowledge my collaborators, Dave Morris and Nancy Lukai. I'd also like to say this is my first SSSA meeting. I'm having a great time. I've enjoyed all the talks so far. And it's also a little trivia. This is as far south as I've ever been in my life. And I'm looking forward to Long Beach next year. Here we go. Okay, let's keep moving here. Just a little bit of a timeline on why we care about coarse wood now. Perhaps we didn't in the past. It's a confusing, people have been confused about coarse wood debris. In the 1960s and before, it was seen as a problem. How do we get rid of it? It's plugging up the streams. It's hard to do silviculture with all this damn wood all over the place. How do we get it out of here? 70s, we thought, well, we can burn it. Let's make some energy. The energy crisis in the late 70s, looking at burning it, all the forest ecologists say, whoa, let's start some long-term site productivity studies and looking at coarse woody debris. So we've got some start of long-term site productivity in the 80s, and many of you are part of those. And now in the turn of the century, we're looking at burning it again for energy. And once again, thankfully, we have these long-term site productivity studies that are starting to come due, and we're applying some of those concepts that we've seen throughout time. So what I'm hoping to do is, I'm lucky as a grad student, I come in at year 15. You know, everyone's done all the work before me, but I get to present it, so I'm thankful for that. Okay, just looking into the dynamic nature of stand recovery, we're looking at black spruce ecosystem. So we have stand initiation. Where are we? Stand initiation, crown closure, self-thinning, and then back to the steady state. And so in terms of nutrient stores, you have an initial pulse and then a dip going back to steady state. But what I'd really like to look at and show is nutrient availability. We have an initial pulse, usually due to the fine residues and fast decomposition of those residues returning nutrients back to the site. But at the same time, you have low demand because the nutrient or the site is just initiating again, so there's low demand. And so we have what's a leaching potential in terms of the difference between demand and availability. And then as demand increases, we also have this place called self-thinning where supply is less than the demand. What we're looking at is where does coarse wood fit into that? What David mentioned before is I'll get into the hypothesis now, is just that it is seen as a relatively small in terms of nutrient, especially N or P, except what we're looking at is based on some work by a synthesis by Leho and Prescott, looking at on poorer sites, it may actually still have some sort of benefit. And so their hypothesis is that on sites where nutrients, especially N or P, limit plant growth, coarse wood accumulation may reduce primary productivity through immobilization of nutrients by decomposers. So that kind of fits into that previous conceptual diagram there. The research questions we asked for this project are, what is the contributions of coarse woody debris to total carbon and nutrient reserves following harvesting, and how does this change over time? And how does soil type, in this case sand and loam, affect the amount or timing of this contribution? And so you can see here, this is the long-term site productivity network that many of you are part of. We're up here in northwestern Ontario, and we've looked at four of the nine sites that are located, well, four and a half, I guess, four of the nine sites that are located in northwestern Ontario. The treatments that were applied for this biomass removal study go all the way from the extreme of taking a D8 and removing the forest floor. It's called full tree and blading. And then going into the full tree plus chipping, where the chip debris was returned to the harvest plot, the full tree, which was the trees were delimbed at the roadside, and then the tree length, where the trees were delimbed at the stump, so all the fine residues remained on site. This is just an aerial photo of what the treatments looked like. They were 30 meter plots and replicated throughout the treatments there. just a visual for all you loblolly pine people. At year three, you can see the growth. The stand is just starting to get established here. By year 10, it's just taller than we are. Not ready for any sort of other kind of management implications. Like we're working on a longer rotation, of course. The methods, like I said, that's a 30 by 30 meter plot split into four quadrants. And there's these two slash plots that are permanently in place and have been sampled throughout this 15-year time period. I also established a transect just to make sure that the slash loading represented the treatment. Up in the top right, you can see this is what the 2 meter by 2 meter slash plot looked like after 14 years. And this is just an example of what we'd sample and we'd weigh, bring back to the site, but take a small subsample back for carbon and nutrient analysis. Getting into some results, on the y-axis, this is tons per hectare, and you can see that the tree length, chipping, and full tree sites, or full tree treatments, started between 15 and 25 kilograms per tons per hectare of coarse wood left on the site, and that mass has since gone down to about 5 kilograms per hectare, and some that's due to decomposition and mechanical breakdown of the wood. This low one here is that bulldoze site, so that basically there was almost no coarse wood initially, so it hasn't done a whole lot. If we split it up by soil, it starts to get a little bit more interesting. That's why I'm here. You can see that the sand in the blue didn't do anything for the first 4 years, and whereas the loam had a faster decomposition, and now sitting here at 14 years, it's roughly the same. This here is not significantly different in terms of carbon and mass loss, but it is, keep this in mind when we get into the nutrient end of things, because it gets a bit more interesting. And here we are at the nutrient end of things. That was fast. Okay. The blue here is ppms, a concentration of the nitrogen in the coarse wood over time. And you can see that it's steadily gone up. And most of that is gone up from, 800 ppm to about 2,500 ppm. And that's largely a result, if you look at the CN ratios of carbon loss through that time. But if we look at content, which is expressed on the left-hand axis here in kilograms per hectare, it actually went up in carbon immobilization, went up, and then after 4 years went down almost to the same spot after 14 years. So one thing I wanted to point out was, because we only did three samplings over these 14 years, we have no idea where the actual apex of concentration or content increase is. It could be there, it could be anywhere. We don't know if it continued to immobilize nitrogen throughout this time. And once again, if we look at the sand versus the loam site, you can see that it's actually only in the sand site are we seeing this immobilization. So on these poor sites, we're seeing some immobilization of nitrogen and then the subsequent release. And it's roughly 22 kilograms per hectare that have been immobilized and then mineralized back into back out. And I have a question mark here of soluble. And the reason I think we're thinking that it is soluble nitrogen, this was all just total nitrogen that we were looking at. But as it came out, was it a soluble form that it came out that's available to the plants? We think so, based on some previous research that we've done just in soluble nitrogen on a leaching study where we just took logs with no soil and just leached them to see what would come out. And you can see decay class here. It's hard to see, but it starts out with a young, the fresh cut wood, so decay class 1 through 5, and you can see an initial immobilization going into release of that soluble nitrogen. Some other nutrients. We did look at the whole slew of nutrients. Here I've shown calcium, magnesium, potassium, and phosphorus. Most of them show just a typical downward trend in nutrient content based on the carbon loss mostly. But the interesting point here is phosphorus has just been a straight line. And one thing that we found in that leaching study previously that I wanted to point out was that phosphorus, this is the solid line is fresh, fresh wood that we looked at, and the dotted line is 15-year-old wood, much to kind of correlate to this study. And we found that after only 7 weeks of leaching, much of the phosphorus had leached out of the wood that we were studying. So why do we not see this here? Well, there was a 6-month lag between the harvest of the site in the winter and the subsequent sampling in the summer. So we're thinking that perhaps we might have missed it. And looking at the literature, maybe that's something that has been missed in the past in literature too, is just how fast phosphorus does leave wood in, out of the phloem. It's just is very mobile. So getting back to the take-home message, where does coarse wood fit into this conceptual diagram? Well, in terms of on poor sites, at least, and for nitrogen, we're looking at perhaps coarse wood aids in nutrient retention, so it actually lowers the leaching potential right after harvest, but it also has a subsequent release that can help with the demand needs after crown closure and later on. So this is where we're at with on these poor sites. So looking back at Leho and Prescott's hypothesis of on these sites where N and P are limiting, coarse wood accumulation may reduce primary productivity through immobilization of nutrients by decomposers. And perhaps an alternative hypothesis is that immobilization occurs when demand is low and will not have a negative effect on primary productivity, but it could have a positive effect as nutrients are released during that period of high demand. So I should note that we're looking at our next chapter is to measure 15-year net primary productivity on these sites and kind of match this up to this hypothesis here. So with that, I'll leave you with some nice dead wood to look at, and thank you. That's a great question. That is just what I want to do. This is being recorded, right? My supervisors can hear this later. Thank you. Yeah, N15 is the way to go.
This goes back about, 40 years to Federer and lots of people. They noticed increased nitrogen in coarse woody material and thought it was coming from soil. Did you do any direct measurement of mass balance of nitrogen in the coarse?
Yeah, I didn't mention that deposition of nitrogen in this area is only 2 kilograms per hectare, and we're seeing closer to 5. If you take the in the wood, we're seeing an accumulation of 5 to 7 kilograms per hectare per year, and we don't know where it came from. That's where the N15 and other types of things will come in handy for sure. So we don't know actually. We're assuming it came from the soil, but not sure.
They assumed it was fixed at first.
Right. We haven't. I'm doing a study right now that's looking at directly underneath those logs and then away from the logs to see more of the organic carbon. This is only looking at just the log and how it's leached out. You'd assume that the organic carbon, because we looked at DOC as well in that previous leaching study, and DOC followed, you know, as decay increased, a lot of DOC was released. So you'd assume that would happen.
I have a question.
Yeah.
And I may have missed it, but I don't think you addressed that, which is how do you measure change in volume over time, or how do you calculate your nutrient pools in the coarse woody debris?
It was based on the mass loss and the concentration. So we'd weigh it every time we sampled. We'd have the actual mass of the log, right? And we get the concentration. And you know we'd do a density study, so you know the density, and you could figure out the content that would of the nutrient that would be what we're looking at.
And how do you protect against loss of fragments?
That's a good question. We'd assume this is where loss of fragments were considered soil, or it's not no longer part of that log, so it's considered part of the soil. So you do see some of that fragmentation is just considered mass loss.
Could that bias your outcome?
Yep. Yep, there was, what we did was we took the decay, like the density, coarse wood is very difficult because density changes within the same log, within the same, centimeter by centimeter, it changes. So what we did was we just took each decay class and figured out a density that was an average density for that decay class and applied the density to that each decay. So we took the decay class of every log and took a density and figured out the average density of that decay by decay class. So it's as best as we could get. It's just so variable.
Thank you, and save more questions for later, please. And